thousand feet up, breaking all the lights on the doors. And I ain't seen no ceilings. We came in through the top floor. You're listening to Feminist Killjoys, PhD, in our Feminism, Pop Culture, and Politics, as discussed by two professional Killjoys.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Melody.
And today, we will be talking about feminism, misogyny, and cosmetics. How's it going, Mel?
I'm doing great. I made some vegan cinnamon bread with my friends the other night.
And ooh.
Yeah, it's really good. It's from one of Issa's cookbooks, the holiday-themed one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that one?
I do. I love it. What holiday is it?
This one is Father's Mother's Day, Parents' Day.
Okay, great.
And I put Earth Balance on it, which means that Daniel is now obsessed with the bread, my cat. Mm-hmm. And so now he's following the plate around. And he is determined to eat the bread, so I might need to ask him to leave. See?
Oh, kitty.
After he puked up his breakfast, so, you know.
Yeah.
Hang on. Please hold. I'm going to get him out of here. Come here, Daniel. Okay. You can have a piece of bread out here. Daniel, watch this. Look at. Here. Look at bread. No, Daniel, see how I threw it over there for you? There you go. Okay. Let's just hope he also is trying to learn how to open up doors with door handles. He's almost there.
Like Jurassic Park.
What?
Oh. Do you not know that epic scene in Jurassic Park where they open the doors?
The cats do?
No, the dinosaurs, but
still. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's all.
Yes, it's just like Jurassic Park. Yes. He just needs a little bit more confidence. If he would just hang on to the door handle
right.
And let his weight open it up, he'd get it, but he just gets too scared right at the end, so.
Right. Oh, cats. Yeah. Cool, so you made cinnamon bread. That sounds fun. Anything else of note?
No, not really. I just looked at the weather, and it's going to be 50, 60, 60, 50, 60, so we're out of the 30s.
Great. So snow will melt. Good. I'm happy for you all.
And there's actually green stuff popping up in my yard.
Good.
Even though the snow, just melted yesterday, some kids stopped by this morning. They're like, look it, there's green stuff all over your yard, and, all of our plants are
Oh, cute.
They're coming up.
Yeah. That's great.
It's spring.
Yes.
And then it's summer. Which is, but it's spring for now.
Yes. Cool. Good.
Great. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Let's see. This morning, we're recording on Friday. This morning, did a Hands to Heart Center yoga class. Hands to Heart Center, I've mentioned before. I think it's a volunteer organization that just basically has partners with a bunch of organizations and hospitals and sort of temporary housing and all of these things that cater to marginalized low-income folks, and then we teach free yoga classes at those different organizations, and they just sort of send volunteers whenever we're available. So I did a class for them this morning, which was nice, and tonight I'm doing the first day of the prison yoga program, or rather the prison yoga project training, and that's a three-day training that they're in Boston this weekend. And the Prison Yoga Project is something I've been following for a long time that I discovered right around the time I started doing yoga in the jails in Minneapolis. And this guy, James Fox, is the founder and just has a lot of knowledge about trauma-informed yoga specifically for incarcerated populations. And also sort of, I'm just excited to be in a space of people who, some of whom will have also had experiences inside of jails and prisons and sort of just navigating all of those things that I've had to navigate doing that work and also finding out how to get back into it, basically, because I haven't been in Boston back inside the system, so at least not for yoga. So I'm
That's
looking forward
awesome.
To that.
That is amazing. I'm so happy that you get
Thank you.
That
yeah.
trainer thing. Well, it's great that you're just doing all the activist yoga stuff because I know that's very important to you. So that's that's exciting that you've had there's opportunities to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll have to get some more information for you off air because I'd love to connect my yoga studio with that program because it's what
totally.
He goes around and trains the teachers.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
They would love that because they do some training for trauma-informed yoga, and they
right.
But I know they would love to know about this person if they don't already. So
yeah, totally. I'll make sure I get you a link, and I'll put it in our show notes too, if folks are
yeah.
curious.
Do you all accept donation? Like, is it something where it's like they need donations to pay for, or like, do you have to pay for the training?
Yes.
You
and
yourself.
If anybody, so that's funny that you mentioned this, because I had a big crisis because it was a lot of money and I'm underemployed, and it was difficult for me to scrounge up the money to do it. And it is making things very, very tight and difficult. And so I asked my yoga studio if I could do like a fundraiser class to help me with the costs of the training. And then I freaked out and had a lot of like guilt because there's so many other places people could be giving money, and so I didn't do that. So I don't know. I would love people.
But you training, but if I give my money to you, then you're helping people in prisons.
Yeah, I know. I feel if people, well, here's what I'll do, and this is shitty capitalist logic in my brain, but I like don't want to just take money for nothing. So if people want to go to my website and PayPal donate to help me with this training cost, I will do, like, if you're into my tarot scopes, I can give you your life or year tarot card, which everybody has a tarot card that assigns to the date of their birth. And I can
really?
Give you a, mm-hmm. So I could do
that. Oh my
that.
God, that is a good deal.
So that's something, or really anything else of a trade that people could think of. If people want to donate, I'd be happy to do some kind of trade. So thanks for bringing that up. I wasn't even going to mention that, but that would be awesome. My website is Rachel Ann Jolie. I'll put it in the show notes too.
I was asking because I thought maybe they had a scholarship program, so then listeners could donate to that scholarship program, right? But now it's more acute talking about you. But that's
they
why I brought up in the first place, because I thought I would figure that it would be expensive, you know?
Yes. So the other answer to this question, sorry to turn that, I was just like, oh, that's so funny because I had such a crisis about it. But they do have a donate button is also the answer. So you can donate directly to them for sure. And that will help get, basically they have like a yoga sort of manual that they send to prisoners. So you can donate to help them do that. And then they do have a scholarship fund. I was on the waiting list, so I didn't get the scholarship.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure they would accept, I'm sure part of the donations go to that as well. So yeah, certainly you can donate directly to Prison Yoga Project and just Google that. But if you want something in return from me, go to my website. Thank you. That's it. That's all I got.
I know there was some news you wanted to share. We usually don't do like a news break much anymore, but I think there's some important stuff going on that...
This is a little throwback to our old segment, Who's Ruining the Dinner Party? And it is definitely some new legislation that passed. It's being referred to as SOSTA FESTA, SOSTA/FESTA. And this legislation, I've grammed about it a couple times. It basically, the sort of short, simple version is that it's sort of framed as the sort of anti-sex trafficking bill that is supposedly, purportedly going to reduce sex trafficking by making it harder to do sex trade on the internet. So there's this website called backpages.com that sex trafficking has existed on, but it is primarily used for consensual sex work and thus is like one of the main sources of safe income for sex workers, because if you have the ability to sort of screen people on the internet before meetings or to just do internet, you know, like cam work or whatever you're doing via the internet, that's literally your livelihood. And also it makes it much safer if you are doing in real life meetings. These internet sites become a buffer. They become a safe way to engage in that work, or at least a much safer way. And so now that this legislation has passed, the access to those internet sources are completely gone from sex workers. So sex workers are really fucking struggling right now. A lot of many of their jobs are just like completely gone because of this. And it's really, really, really bad news. I made a couple calls that didn't seem to make any difference. And so what to do now is if you want to donate directly to sex workers, the website Tits and Sass is doing a fundraiser for sex workers who've lost work because of this legislation. So I will also link to that in the show notes and the newsletter, and I'll put it on our gram as well.
Thank you for sharing that. The back page site going down, there's a lot to say about that, especially in conjunction. I'm not agreeing with it, but in conjunction with sex trafficking, I was having a pretty long conversation with my friend in Atlanta about it because sex trafficking is such a big problem there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one takeaway or the one major point that I was making is that, like, sex workers are some of the best people to keep an eye on sex traffickers and, like, be able to identify that kind of stuff. And by keeping this work criminalized and illegal and shutting down communication channels, it's actually hurting the ability to find the sex traffickers. And it just continues to help conflate sex trafficking and sex work as if they're the same thing, and they're
not. Yeah. Rawr! Yeah. So that's definitely ruining the dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. I'm excited about our topic today. And it's a little bit of it's tangentially related to something we've talked about a number of times on the show in terms of sort of beauty and feminism, sex and feminism in particular, and sort of especially like the aesthetic realm of sex and sex appeal. We've talked about that in relation to agency, but we have you brought up a very particular sort of iteration of this based on things you were hearing from your students. So I would love you to share sort of the background on this topic for today.
I'd love to, Rachel. So my students were doing literature reviews in my media class, and I was asking them to find a topic that they would be interested in studying that was related to my class. And a few of my students kept bringing up this makeup shaming thing. So they were like talking about makeup tutorials. They were really interested in makeup tutorials, but then they kept bringing up this makeup shaming. And the way that I've understood makeup shaming, and Rachel and I have had many, many debates about makeup in general. So I'm the like old stodgy second wave feminist that's like, makeup is the tool of the patriarchy. And if you wear makeup, you are the tool of the patriarchy. And then Rachel is like the no, makeup is like my choice. And it's like a radical choice to blah, blah, blah. And it's not for men. And, you know, so we often like will hold those two fairly divergent opinions. And so from my experience growing up, I thought the backlash was from like old stodgy women that were like, take off that makeup, you look prettier without it, and I love you just the way you are, like that kind of backlash. But the way that the women were describing it was totally different than anything I had ever heard. And actually a man in my class who works at Target like chimed in and said, yeah, like the workers at Target, the women who wear a lot of makeup, customers will actually say to them, like make comments about that they're wearing too much makeup. And it's from women and men. And it's not in the like, it's not in that second wave feminist tone. There's something else going on, but it's really, really upsetting young women. And one of my students has talked to me. One of the reasons she's interested in researching this is because she's had so much backlash, both in person and online, for wearing makeup. And I just found it to be so peculiar because everywhere we look, women are told to wear makeup. I mean, magazines, the people that they see outside, music videos, right? Makeup is a thing. And then so at the same time, there's people in real life telling them that they shouldn't be wearing so much makeup. And so I was just very curious about it. And so my student Destiny, she found this amazing academic article about feminism, makeup tutorials, and like using makeup as a masquerade, but also as a political social tool. So we're definitely going to use that as our focal point today. But I just wanted to give a big shout out to my students for bringing this to my attention because I had no idea. And I was glad, especially my one student was so open with telling me about the trauma behind getting critiqued for wearing makeup. And I just, you know, I'm curious what you think, Rachel, but my biggest takeaway where I'm still kind of confused is like, how can women be told that they're supposed to be wearing makeup? And they're like, cool, I'm going to wear makeup. It's not for you, but I'm going to be wearing my makeup. And then at the same time, be told that they're not, that their makeup is like too much or like they're not supposed to be wearing. It's like such a mixed message. So that's the background. I'm still confused. That's why I want to explore this topic with you today. But do you have any initial thoughts about the new era of backlash?
Yeah, and I said this to you when you first brought it up, and I do think you're right. I think there is something new and unique happening, and I think YouTube and social media are part of the reason there's something sort of unique happening. But I'm less confused because I think women have always been told conflicting messages in terms of the sort of virgin whore dichotomy. Like, you can be sexy, but not too sexy. You have to be, you know, wear revealing clothes, but not too revealing. Like, I feel like we've all, women and now sort of feminine of center people that are perceived in particular ways, et cetera, have always, always, always been told that. And I do feel like the sort of... not too much makeup thing has been makeup, but not too much makeup has been around for a while from in sort of heterosexual spheres of both. Well, men and women largely often are the ones doing the critiquing, disproportionately men, but women are part of that too. And I'm remaining in that binary because I think there's less of that in trans and non-binary communities, less shaming. So just that's why I was sticking with men and women exclusively I was just like less shocked by that and sort of, you know, have experienced that myself when I make choices to, you know, for example, wear super dark lipstick that I've seen men on the internet say is like ugly or whatever, like, you know, things like that. So less confusing to me, but I do think it's definitely worth exploring, particularly in the ways that it really is like a phenomenon. I mean, in prepping for this show, you found, along with the help of your students, like so many links to articles about exactly this, and there's tons of memes. And actually one of the memes that I think speaks directly to this is, it was a cartoon of three different faces of a woman or feminine of center person. And one had, she was wearing a lot of makeup, looked very fabulous. And the quote below was, "You're wearing, you know, that's too much makeup. You would be so much prettier without it." And then the second one, she had some makeup on, but it was quote unquote natural makeup. So like, it's still like, you know, her eyes were big, her lips were full, but it was all just like very like light and, you know, what people sort of perceive as like acceptable. And then it below it says, "See, you look so much prettier without makeup," even though she's still wearing makeup. And then the third frame is a picture of a face that has actually no makeup. And like, her eyes are small. Like, there's, you know, she looks a little bit different. Like, you know, there's, she doesn't look like she's wearing makeup. And in terms of hegemonic beauty norms, maybe looks like the least fitting into that. And then the last one, the panel quote at the bottom says, under that face, like, "Is something wrong? Are you sick? You look really tired." So it's like, people don't actually mean don't wear makeup. They mean wear makeup that is acceptable to like hegemonic beauty norms, which involves, of course, whiteness and class norms and, you know, sexuality norms, etc. So that's my initial thought. And I like that meme. I'll make sure I include that in our social meds too.
Totally. And I guess my confusion too, as you were talking, I can pinpoint it more that I think it just shows like how I grew up. So I didn't grow up on the internet. So I was more familiar with people getting bullied like interpersonally, you know, like by mm-hmm. their mother or their boyfriend or,
right,
you know, somebody that's more closer to them. This concept of like getting shamed by somebody at Target or like,
yeah,
strangers doing it, and I know that's common online, but when they started talking about like customers doing it, I was just like, what is going on? Like, who, like, there's mm-hmm. some kind of vibe going on now where people feel like they have the rights to like tell people how they, I don't know. I was just floored by, especially when the guy told me, my male student told me that, you know, like, not to say that he confirmed it, but the fact that he even knows about it, like, that's how widespread it is. Because sometimes with bullying with women, it's just us that know that.
Right.
So, yeah, yeah. That's. Yeah. I think it's just more like my, you know, bleeding edge millennial experience where I'm just like, wow, this is horrible. Like, people are doing this. All right. So, yeah. Do you want to actually start by explaining what I found really interesting in the research that we did was the use of makeup in social protesting spaces, because that is a space in which people are heavily policed, unfortunately. But I found that article from Netta of Black Lives Matter. And mm-hmm. you want to kind of explain like her, I feel like it's very similar to you. Like, it reminded me of like your kind of take on things like makeup in political spaces.
Yeah. I mean, I think Netta's point, and everybody should check out this article from Essence magazine that sort of profiled in. Her point was, I wore makeup before I became a Black Lives Matter activist. I'm not going to stop because I'm a Black Lives Matter activist now. Like, that wouldn't make sense. And for her, makeup is very much related to self-care. It's a calming way, or it's like a sort of anxiety reducer, which I think is something that a lot of people who wear makeup will talk about as a stress reducer. It is extremely calming as somebody who wears makeup to do that. You're sort of zen. You're not connected to your phone or your computer. Like, it's a really lovely, calming thing to do. She talks about it as sort of a collective action. She'll go to her friend's house and, like, do her hair at her friend's house. So her whole point was, this is who I am. This is, she grew up, her mom was a beautician growing up. And certainly we absolutely could have episodes upon episodes about sort of beauty distinctions in different racial and class and other cultural backgrounds. And so thinking about sort of the history of Black beauty shops is, I think, really important and a sort of source of pride and of cultural heritage to sort of reclaim a sense of beauty when literally all of society, since Black people were stolen and brought to America, were being told they were the opposite of beautiful, I think is also really fucking powerful. So, yeah, I mean, but I think her main point is, like, I'm not going to not wear my makeup to a protest because it's a protest. Like, I'm going to be who I am, which involves having my hair done and having lipstick on. And why wouldn't I put my face on sort of before the protest just the same way I would to do any of the work that I do in the world, to be who I am in the world.
Thank you. Yeah. And I found that to be really powerful, especially as somebody who is definitely more on the, like, no makeup spectrum, but definitely, I'm trying to get better at understanding different forms of makeup. And I wear makeup sometimes too, but, you know, I have conflicting feelings about it. But so we have this awesome academic article by Dr. Michelle White, and it's called Beauty as an Act of Political Warfare, Feminist Makeup Tutorials and Masquerades on YouTube. And we'll give you access to the article. It's behind a paywall right now, but I have a copy of it that I'll make available because, boo, academic.
Fuck paywalls.
Yes. Thank you for that.
Fuck not all like walls, paywalls, border walls.
Yeah, all walls are bad. Support the work of, but let me tell you, like, Michelle, just as a quick, like, economics thing, Michelle White does not lose any money if I give you access.
Right.
Like, it's actually better that her work gets spread around. So just so you know, me giving it to you does not mean that she's losing money, because we don't get money based on how many people read our articles.
We get no money for our research, actually.
That is correct. That is correct. I do get some royalties for my book, but it's like not even, I mean, it's like
minuscule
compared to the hours that I put in. Yes.
Right.
At any rate, what I found really compelling in this article was how she talked to, or she quoted people from various different races and ethnicities, and they were talking about how both makeup can be used as a mask to put on when you're going out into a world that oppresses you, right? So you have this symbolism embedded into your makeup, but also that, like, some of the makeup tutorial artists use this, it's called feminist makeuping, I guess is the, like, trendy hashtag thing, but that they, like, put feminist symbolisms into certain things in the makeup, right? So, like, one of the anecdotes that really stuck out to me was putting eyeshadow on, but you need to put it on very thin, like the glass ceiling. So then when you need to break through, it's like, and so just like thinking about makeup in that way is so much different than the ways that, you know, I grew up being taught that, like, makeup makes you beautiful for the patriarchy, right? It's like this totally different way of using makeup. And I feel like the power of YouTube to get that voice out is really important, because again, when I was growing up, it was like magazines is kind of where we were getting our messages from about how to be a woman or how to be femme. And so these makeup tutorials are really important, because you can see once the tutorials started coming out and women were talking and femme, I think that all the people she interviewed or quoted were identified as women. So I should be more careful with my language, but that people who wear makeup, like, there's so much meaning behind it. They're not dupes of the patriarchy, you know, and that was really important for me to read, because I often just think that that is what women are doing sometimes. But if you look at all these tutorials, like, that's not it at all. Right. It's a form of art. It's creative. Mm-hmm. Some people even throw in, like, feminist commentary about it. And so it's a really cool way of using makeup that, you know, I think Rachel's, you can speak for yourself, obviously, but, like, the queer experience with makeup is very much in line with that. It's just not something that is talked about in the mainstream, right? So it's been, yeah, so I really enjoyed that part of the argument. Hey, Killjoys, just wanted to remind you about some things. So make sure to subscribe to our podcast with your favorite application. If you have the iTunes app, you can really easily click on it and leave us a review. We love reviews. Reviews are fun, even when they're bad. Also, on the social media tip, you can follow us on the gram, where Rachel does a lot of gramming. Follow us on Twitter. I like to tweet some stuff out. And Facebook. You can just like our episode page for, or like our podcast page for episode updates. Or you can join our closed community group, which is Feminist Killjoys Community WTF Power exclamation point. On Spotify, you should follow our Feminist Killjoys PhD mixtape. And if you have extra dollars and want to support us, feminist media makers, you should. You can go to fkjphd.com, click on the Patreon logo that'll take you to our Patreon page. Patreon donors get stickers, access to our Killjoy newsletter. $5 or more gets you bonus eps. It's all good over there. Or if you just want to do a one-time donation, which we also super duper appreciate, you can click on the birdie on our website and it'll take you to our PayPal situation. And make sure if you're giving us a donation on PayPal that you give us your mailing address so I can send you a sticker. And of course, you can always email us back in 2005 at fkj.phd@gmail.com. And if you want to call us on your cellular phone, that would be 414-858-7818. Leave us a voicemail.
Yeah, so I obviously agree that makeup can be resistant. I feel like I want to just do sort of another thing that I've said on the podcast a million times. Like, I believe in the power of agency. I definitely have third wave feminist tendencies in my sort of independent desire to choose and think about things like makeup as a tool of resistance. And also never, ever, ever thinking that that is a substitute for sort of organizing structural radical change in the world. But unlike some sort of leftists who think that individual choices are completely meaningless, I actually, like, the kind of revolutionary world that I want to build is one where we can all flourish and thrive and feel like creative, unique individuals. And so I, you know, if we're fighting for the liberation and joy of all people, I would never want to deny anybody, like, joy in their life. And I think makeup is one thing that brings people joy. So that's just sort of my agreeing with your sort of analysis of it being a tool of resistance, and also my asterisks, as we always have them. So there's that. And yeah, should we dig more deeply into the article with some of the more specifics of the argument?
Yes, definitely. Let's do that. Can I just give the argument that the author is making generally?
Yeah.
So Dr. White argues that these makeup tutorial artists deploy critical masquerades to disrupt women's position as image and support a beauty politics that is informed by feminist text. So that is what Dr. White found in looking at all of these different makeup tutorial videos. And so the masquerading thing is really important. And then also how their beauty politics are informed by feminist texts. But can you explain, Rachel, a little bit what they mean by critical masquerades or the concept of masquerading with makeup?
Yes. So I think I just want to quote her specifically because yep. I think she says it really clearly. So she's using this essay from Marianne Dwan. I'm actually not sure. I'm not familiar with the scholar, though I feel like I should be. So she's saying this of the author. She considers how some powerful women use feminine masquerade to make their intellectual competence and assertive positions less threatening to men. According to Doan, the masquerade in flaunting femininity holds it at a distance. Womanliness is a mask which can be worn or removed. End quote. Masquerade allows women to employ and refuse essentialist gender categories. The masquerade's resistance to patriarchal positioning would therefore lie in its denial of the production of femininity as closeness, as presence to self, as precisely imagistic. So,
do you believe that? Wait, do you believe, or what do you think about the idea that makeup can be used or can be taken up as something that makes our power more acceptable to the patriarchy? Because I don't think that's how women are using makeup today. But
I don't think so either. Certainly not the YouTube people that we're talking about, and certainly not the kind of makeup that I sort mm-hmm. of adhere to. Mm-hmm. early intentions of the makeup industry were probably very closely related to that, whether it was conscious or not. Mm-hmm. But I think that White, the author of the article we're reading, is using that as an example of actually what isn't happening now. I think she's mm-hmm. trying to say that masquerade is actually doing something very different.
Totally.
And in fact, asserting a power that through makeup. And part of that assertion of power is doing something that you know actually isn't in line with the male gaze. And so I think that's how I think about that.
Yeah, and I feel, well, I want to give a shout out. Our actual colleagues and friends were cited in this article, which makes it even better. Mm-hmm. But like one way in which people are using makeup now, like not in that way, not as docile bodies, not as submissive to the patriarchy, is so Lori Olette and Jacqueline Arcy, two of our friends and colleagues, say they argue that attending to and caring for oneself, including makeup, can become a strategy for coping with and managing a racist, sexist, and homophobic society, and for fashioning and refashioning resilient selves for the long durée of social change. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's very much like Netta's point too. But that it's like self-care to put makeup on. And that's definitely something different than what we've been told. It's usually like we wear makeup to make ourselves more acceptable to the patriarchy. And that's definitely has roots in like the second wave butchy feminist kind of aura, you know, like, well,
right.
Women are scary when they don't have makeup on. So if you're going to come in here and like demand a raise, like, can you at least look pretty when you do it?
Right, right. Yeah. And what I think is interesting is that now we have people saying women look scary with makeup on, which is what the whole sort of whole point of this is. And again, I think there's some intentionality in that.
So so let's talk about this makeup shaming situation. And I'd love for listeners, if you've had your own experiences or you've witnessed makeup shaming in ways that we don't talk about, please share with our social medias or send us an email and we'll talk about it more. But besides the anecdotes that I shared earlier, the shaming is really about, there's a couple different ways. It's like the just hypocritical shaming women for wearing makeup and then not wearing makeup. Then there's this, like, in terms of using that word masquerade, that people feel like it's like they're getting duped. And it really reminded me of the same horrible, horrible reactions that people have with trans people. Like, you're duping, mm-hmm. you know, you're like tricking us into thinking that you're somebody that you're not.
Yep.
And so that is like much more serious of an issue. But it's the same kind of line of thinking that when women put on a ton of makeup, that they're duping the men specifically that they're out with. Mm-hmm. And that also, like, it's just not, it's not, this is where I'm like, what? Like, this, it's not like womanly, right? It's not your, it's too much, right? Because what I love about the new makeup era, if there is one, and I don't want to give credit to Kim Kardashian, but she might have been one of the celebrities that was like, yes, is like the, like all the makeup, like the overdone eyebrows. I love the over the top makeup because it's so clear that people are doing it for themselves, because it's this, and I feel like there's some connections to drag queen makeup as well. And it's like, when you see these women with gorgeous makeup, it's like, okay, that's clear. That's like, obviously clearly for them, you know, like, and I love that. And I love all the glitter. Like, did you see Wrinkle in Time yet?
Not yet.
I'll have to look for this, and viewers, listeners, please let me know. Wrinkle in Time, the women have these amazing glittery everything makeup. Everything glitter, and I like want all of it. And so I'm hoping that they have a makeup line inspired by Wrinkle in Time, because I will go buy it. But like, I just love the over the top makeup, and I think that is definitely a new part of the makeup scene, and really shows how women are doing it for themselves and not to make themselves look more attractive for men, which was often the message. I feel like I'm just like sounding like a broken record, but
no,
I just wanted
no,
to remind I, people like why it's so significant that people are wearing over the top makeup, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm sure there's been, or I know, in fact, I know there's been things written about sort of, appropriation of drag culture in mm-hmm. sort of in the Kardashian land. I mean, lots of appropriation in general in the Kardashian world. But for better or worse, I think there has been a sort of a mainstreaming of exactly what you're describing, the sort of hyperbolic femininity that has primarily, if we think about makeup being worn in excessive ways, mm-hmm. it's always been in groups that have been deemed sort of less than and marginalized. Mm-hmm. So if we think about Black women and acrylic nails, there's a lot of discussion about the sort of roots of that. I would also say I grew up with poor white people that had acrylic nails as well. Mm-hmm. It's seen as trashy, right? So we have these class elements. You know, eyelashes that don't look natural, which I 100% don't have lashes that look natural, are seen as also trashy. Like you know, I've heard people talk about, there's all these comparisons to strippers, right? Which are supposed to be the sort of less than category. If we think about drag queens, a class of people who were, you know, have been violenced and harmed and marginalized throughout history in particular ways, and now we're sort of literally imitating the sort of highlighter and high cheekbones and lip liner and all of these things. And so if we think about wanting to claim sort of an embodiment of an identity that has been deemed too much or unacceptable or less than, I think that's really fucking powerful.
Yeah.
That's all. So to go back to some of the internet trolls and comments and how this, I think, is a unique moment in terms of shaming, is the unique moment, I think, is that we exist on the internet. And you mentioned this when you said, you know, you sort of grew up without it, so it mm-hmm. manifested differently. But I do think we've certainly talked about trolls on the show before. We haven't devoted a whole episode to it, but it is worth noting the way, the entitlement that people on the internet have to say horrible, horrible fucking things. And it's not even just, there's a lot of it on YouTube. I mean, YouTube, you can be pretty anonymous on YouTube if you want. And so people are real, real bad there. But even we were seeing in some of the research that we were doing, we were seeing a lot of tweets of, again, both men and women. Mm-hmm. that's what I surmised. So, yeah, it's, I mean, what do you have to say about sort of the internet and trolls aspect of all this?
I think, so one thing that I kind of surmised in reading through all this stuff is that the reactions are, like you said, not new, but also very interesting in that I bet you with some of these trolls that they want their women to like look hot, but look hot for them. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that some of this backlash is in regards not necessarily to how much makeup they're wearing, but the reasons for why they're wearing makeup. And when I started to see the examples being given in Dr. White's article about like what the tutorialists were saying on air, and like using feminism to explain why they wear makeup and having it be very selfish, like this is for me. Now I'm getting more why there is backlash, especially from men. And I could even say women, right? So like from people like me, maybe who have, you know, have these thoughts that makeup is just a tool of the patriarchy, that women are reclaiming the makeup and it's for them. And it's basically like, I don't give a shit about you guys. And so the men are then reacting in this way that isn't about the makeup. It's about being unincluded from femininity that they were taught was always performed for them.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's my very succinct thought. But can I just share a funny meme that I, or like a funny react? I just love these reactions to makeup. So one of the things that often men will say that I brought up earlier is that why women are lying to us when they wear makeup. And then one person's response was, I don't see why I'm being blamed for a man stupid enough to think I have gold sparkly eyelids.
yeah, totally.
Snappies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It goes back to toxic masculinity, men's belief that, as the internet men say a lot, females belong, you know, are for them, belong to them, are supposed to be in their service. And to have women specifically doing things that men are saying, hey, we don't actually like this, and they're like, yeah, so the fuck what, mm-hmm. is important. But that doesn't mean that they're not, these, you know, women and feminine of center people who are doing these tutorials, that doesn't mean that these comments aren't going to be difficult or painful sometimes, because they can be, as we know, feminists on the internet, women and feminine of center people on the internet face death threats, rape threats, you know, it can get really, really, really ugly. And so I think to have the sort of confluence of femininity that used to be in the service of men and a video that's explicitly saying it's not, combined with the ability of misogynistic trolling, is just sort of a firestorm that is really upsetting. And I applaud the women and feminine of center folks who are responding, you know, resiliently to that. But I'm sure that it's really difficult. I mean, it's difficult to be.
Yes.
In the world in general, but yeah.
I appreciate you saying that, because I think we've been, or at least I've been, highlighting some of the humorous responses. Mm-hmm. And that is a coping mechanism that we use to deal with this kind of stuff. But it is like really traumatic. Like my students are clearly like really upset by the shaming that happens to them. And it's not, I don't want to expect people to have hearts of steel that can just hammer back with like, men are so stupid they think my gold sparkly eyelids are real. So it's just sad. I don't know. It's just really frustrating. I don't like to hear that people get shamed for who they are, especially when they're creating these spaces online for themselves, you know? And like that, I love, one thing that I love about the internet is that it's corporately controlled. Just kidding. That it's that like we can create our own spaces and create our own communities. And then when the trolls figure out where those communities are and they get all upset, their little hearts get all upset because it's not about them. They get, I don't know. And maybe we need to talk more about how, what the trolls are really getting at, you know? And so when we get those vicious comments, it's that we need to be reminded that it's all about them. Like, they're the ones that are feeling excluded, and that's their problem. And that it's really not about how we look, or it's really a symbolism of their loss of power, their loss of space that they've been given for so long. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like the shaming is not going to stop, because men are men, not all men. Hashtag not all men, but trolls, internet white man trolls are internet white man trolls, and they're never going to go away. But maybe there's some skill shares that we can develop. I'm sure that are already developing in terms of how to respond. And I like that there's been some best practices. You can see how people have been responding, but that's, like you said, that still doesn't take away the hurt, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's a dark space. This is reminding me, I was at a comedy show of a friend who does stand-up comedy, and there was like some back and forth with the audience, and this audience member said, they were asking about like addictions or something, like, what are you addicted to? And this guy said thirst traps, and like the guy on stage like didn't know, like half the audience didn't know what he was talking about. Do you know what a thirst trap is?
No.
The way the guy in the audience described it is that it's a woman, and that's how he described it, a woman who takes like a selfie to try to elicit like praise and attention, but that doesn't necessarily like deliver, like it's just trying to get attention. So we have these new, even new names to code misogyny. And it was like, he was like in public, like unashamedly, like saying like, yeah, fucking thirst traps, like fucking women. And it's like, you're literally just like brazenly being misogynistic and suggesting that because a woman posts a selfie that somehow she owes you something. And like what? And so it's grim. It's really fucking grim. So, and it's difficult that we live in a world where sexualization is equated with, you know, for men, right? And
that's the assumption.
You know, we talked about this in the selfie episode a lot, and there's just so many other powerful things that can happen when, you know, to take a sexy selfie or whatever. And there's so many different feminist sex workers and erotic advocates who talk about this, and it's unfortunate. And so when makeup used to be in the service of that sort of sexual appeal, and it isn't necessarily any longer, that is going to threaten sort of toxic masculine ego.
That's a great anecdote to explain that.
Yeah.
So we're like almost out of time. Do you want to, do you have any like final takeaway thoughts before we go into RWL?
I don't think so. I think I've made it pretty clear on the show before that I, you know, am somebody who really likes indulging high femininity. And that includes at this point in my life, including fake nails and fake lashes. And, that I really love it. It makes my days better. Yeah. And that's it. That's so that I'm just like team wearing makeup. That's all I'll say. What about you? Any closing thoughts?
Just to repeat something I said earlier, that this discussion has really, I definitely, my thinking about makeup has evolved, and I feel like it's, you know, there's still, I still think that it's good that people have different opinions about makeup, and the end is like, it's your choice. You know, you can do whatever you want, but it's just been very eye-opening, and my thinking has definitely evolved a lot looking at this kind of research. So another big shout out to my students for doing this research and bringing this issue to my attention. This new issue.
Sorry. I was going to say one more thing. I'm so sorry.
No, so, you only get one takeaway.
My second takeaway, and I think this may have come up on the Facebook group when we were talking, when I was pitching this as a topic, we didn't get into sort of cosmetic industry labor practices and what cosmetics you're buying. And so absolutely, that is another topic that I think is important to address. And we just didn't address it because we were really focused on sort of the this sort of YouTube culture around this. But absolutely, we can have a discussion about ethical makeup to purchase. And there's, you know, plenty of people who are talking about that. So I do want to say that's a whole nother topic, but that we can. And again, if depending on your relationship to sort of lifestyle politics and how much you practice sort of voting with your dollar and trying to be a good, you know, buying citizen, I guess. And this is, of course, all wrapped up in capitalism. So I'm not trying to say this is anti-capitalist at all. But just that as a side note that, you know, I would hope that we can, if we all indulge in makeup, to try to be somewhat ethical. And I'll admit that I am sometimes, and sometimes I'm not. And that's just sort of where I am at right now. So that's another note.
Yes, and to piggyback off that, to bring Target full circle, Target has, well, ELF, which is funny because that's like a...
Yeah, it's an animal.
But they're vegan. They're vegan, and I guess Target is getting a lot more vegan-esque.
Great.
Yeah, so we can definitely talk about this more. We should do some research and do some a little mini thing because it's becoming more mainstream.
Ethical.
We could do a bonus ep on it. Yeah. Great idea.
Cool. All right.
Let's go. Reading, watching, and listening with Rachel and Melody.
Love it. What are you reading, watching, listening to this week?
I am reading a lot of stuff about student government and the legalities of open meetings, and the rights of journalists to go into open meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Having some things at school about the student government not understanding that they're a public entity and they need to make their meetings open. So I've been doing a lot of research on that and reading articles about student journalists fighting and standing up for their access to student government. So
great.
I'm reading that. Also, shout out to Dawson Barrett, a former guest of ours, that he just got published in Teen Vogue this week. So I'll make sure that we link his stuff in the social meds. Yeah. Yeah. He just sent it to me right before we went on air. So, yes. Watching the new Drake video, the new one with all the ladies.
Yes. Yep. Nice. Nice for what? No.
What? Nice for, yeah, I don't know. I'm on it from a feminist standpoint.
Yeah, okay. I haven't watched it closely enough.
We'll talk about it later. I'm just like,
Okay.
And it's because, you know, part of it is because then Nicki Minaj came out with a new song this week called Chung Lee, and I didn't even know it was new. I'm like on top of something on accident. I heard it on the radio, and it's the best. And I feel like my one quick argument about this is that I wish male rappers would give more, instead of just talking about how awesome women are, just give them more space in the industry because it's still super, super male dominated. So put your money where your rap is.
Awesome.
What about you?
I'm reading letters from my incarcerated pen pal. He's into occult, esoteric, pagan-esque, religious, spiritual stuff. And so we've been talking about tarot, and we are making a collective sort of tarot guide. So I'm sending him images of the major arcana cards, which are the first cards in the deck, and like the majors versus that's not important. But, mm-hmm. and he's sort of writing his sort of perspective or an anecdote about how he relates to that card. So I'm hoping to turn that into a zine eventually. But I wouldn't push this on him. I was like, a lot of pen pals, in prison, will talk about how bored they get. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, would you want to do like a writing thing back and forth? And since he had just asked for a tarot deck, I was like, what if we do the tarot? So I'm reading stuff from him. A lot of it is really fucking heavy. Like, people who are incarcerated have a lot of trauma. So there's a lot of really, really heavy stories, but, mm-hmm. But it's powerful. So that's what I've been reading this week, along with I finished M Archive, which is the book that I've been reading. It was really wonderful. Watching nothing new. Oh, actually, I saw Blockers this week. I've mentioned that Logan and I try to see a movie once a week. We don't always stick to that. But Blockers is like a silly teen comedy, but actually has some really cool, interesting things about sex positivity and youth and young people.
Cool.
Do you know the premise?
No.
Real quick, now I'm the one expanding too much. It takes place on a prom night, and there's three parents who find out that their three daughters have made a sex pact, that they're all going to lose their virginity on prom night. And they have this ridiculous, like, adventure to try to, like, literally... So it's
cock block.
Yes, yes.
Got it.
Yeah. So, but... And at first I was like, fuck this movie. Like, I'm not going to fucking watch adults try to, like, take away youth sexuality. But that's kind of the point, is, like, that they shouldn't take away youth sexuality. And also there's lots of racial diversity and sexuality diversity. So it's a lot of fun. It was a fun movie.
Oh, good.
And you would like it because one of the kids looks like a young Connor Oberst, like, a lot.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Yeah. And his name is Connor in the movie. And I was like, I see you, scriptwriter. and then listening to not much new. I don't think I've mentioned there's a cover of a song. Zohaya is a band that I really like. Or he's really a person, a musician, who passed away. And Waxahachie and Kevin Morby did a cover of a couple of their songs. And I don't think I've talked about it on air yet. So I listen to that, like, at least once a day. It's really beautiful. Farewell Transmission in particular is just a really fucking beautiful song. So that will be my listening for the week. WTF.
Power.
The whole place is dark. Every light on this side of the town. Suddenly it all went down. Now we'll all be brothers of the fossil fire of the sun. Someone must have set him up. Now they'll be working in the cold gray rock. Now they'll be working in the hot mill steam. Now they'll be working in the concrete. In the sirens and silences now. All the great set up hearts, all at once they start to beat. Thank you. to be.